Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, the podcast where we cover all the pop culture we love to hate, from the classic reality TV moments of the past and present to the latest Daily Mail headlines and everything in between. We'll dive into all the infamous and notorious messes you can't stop watching. I'm looking at you, Jax Taylor. I'm your host, Ryan Bailey.
Folks, welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. This is Ryan Bailey. This is your Wednesday episode. I didn't release an episode yesterday, Tuesday, because I was on a podcast that I love, Celebrity Book Club, with the brilliant Chelsea DeMontes, and I was so thrilled to be on that. So I was like, I'm not going to release today. I mean, even though I'm supposed to be cutting down to 4 days a week, it's tough, you guys. Like, I have so much in me to share. But I was like, oh, okay, I'll highlight this podcast instead of doing mine. And we covered Selma Blair's new book, Mean Baby, which I highly recommend. I'll probably play a clip from the show we did on Thursday's episode, I bet. I'll just throw a little clip in there, but go check it out. Go let her know that you liked us together. You know, this. I know this sounds silly, but I always love guesting on other people's pod, and I've never met her before, and I'm a real admirer of her work, so it was really, it was a real treat for me, and you know I love a challenge like reading. Like reading a book. I had to read the Selma Blair book in like 2 days. And I did it, you guys. You would have been so proud of me just watching me read like the devil. That's not actually a phrase. Listen. Okay. So it's Tuesday night. It's 12:31 a.m. So I guess that's Wednesday morning. And you're like, Ryan, you're burning the midnight oil, and a little bit, but here's the deal, and this is not, I started to do the podcast earlier today, and I was trying to do a Patreon episode, and hello baddies, hello Patreon members, they got a 20-minute episode where I just kind of spouted a lot of my thoughts after I heard the tragic news of what went down in Texas. And please don't groan or roll your eyes, but I understand if you need to. And I understand if you need to switch this off and go to something goofier and funnier. I swear to God, this is only going to be a minute and a half. I reached out to friends about this. I was like, oh, should I, you know, and they said, just make it succinct. And I was like, you obviously don't listen to this podcast. Nothing is succinct. Nothing is, it's all spread out. But it's hard to do a podcast like this where I really, what the goal is, if you listen to Friday's show where we recap The Real Houses of Beverly Hills, where I was talking about the Garth Brooks thing and I was pissing myself with laughter. Like that wasn't fake. That was all real. Like I was in hysterics. And then you get to something like today. And you're like, oh, well, I don't have a funny bone in my body. I don't have anything to give anybody else. And I barely understand anything myself. And thankfully, nobody's looking to me for anything. I don't need to explain any of this to you. You guys probably understand this better than I do. but I do have a great show for you today. I swear to God. I have a great guest that I talked to last week, Jamie Rice, who hosts two amazing podcasts, one called Murderish and a new one that I think your guys are going to freak out about called Dirty Money Moves, Women in White Collar Crime. And we have the best conversation. And she's a Bravo lover like us. So she was dope. And the fact that I'm even saying dope is just ridiculous. But yeah, I keep thinking about the tragedy in Texas today. And, you know, I keep thinking about it because it just seems like we deal with so many of these things. It's just kind of the norm. And I was talking about this in Instagram because I really struggle with these things, like you do, I'm sure. But not that I don't think anyone expects anything of me, but I genuinely get confused about how you kind of keep going or how I'm supposed to talk about the things that I want to talk about and put my attention on all of this kind of stuff that at the end of the day doesn't really matter. We take solace in it and it's like a great diversion, but we have like so many bigger things to work on. And these things keep getting highlighted week after week. And I don't want to get desensitized to these things. Like I talk about getting desensitized to the Kardashians, you know? And I went to the Olivia Rodrigo concert tonight at the Greek. And this has been on the agenda for a long time. So it wasn't like a last minute thing. And Olivia Rodrigo, if you know, I think she's like a 19-year-old pop star who had one of the biggest albums of the year. And I love shit like that. You guys know I'm a huge fan of pop music. And I went, and it was just as creepy as you think. I think I was literally the oldest dude there. It was mainly preteen girls, or not I was 18. Like I would say 40, but it was shocking. But at the same time, it was kind of beautiful in the sense of remember when we were like that. Remember, I was watching these girls like scream every lyric to this girl. She only has one album. Oh, and by the way, Alanis Morissette came out at the end and they sang You Oughta Know. And I was having to explain to all the little girls around me who Dave Coulier was and what it, you know, means to do something at a movie theater. But seriously, Alanis Morissette was my time, and I was just so thrilled. I was like, oh my God, it was like a passing of the baton. But I watched all these girls around, and they were screaming every lyric. And a lot of her songs on that album are about like heartache, like this heartache of this boy. And I was just thinking, you know how much heartache hurts, right? Like we, you know, like that's, we can all share that in common, right? And I was like, this is what every kid deserves. Not heartache, but they deserve to worry about this, about getting their heart broken or breaking somebody's heart way more than going to school and potentially being in a dangerous situation. And I kept thinking about that. Like, man, like, look, that's what, you know, you're lucky, you know, like, that's where we're getting to, right? We're at this point where it's like, wow, this is, I'd rather all of these kids get their heart broken 10 times over than what is becoming a natural occurrence in every day in school every day. And listen, like I said, this isn't about that, but it's just one of those things that I was just thinking, and I was watching all these girls just kind of like sing their hearts out tonight. It was really beautiful, and I know they like all meant it, you know, and I thought it was really cute because, you know, I'm on the other side of that. I mean, I'm sure I can still get my heart broken, but I remember when it could be fresh like that. And that's the shit that I'm sure we all want to protect for our kids. Like that's it. And we don't want anybody to take that away from us. And that's my thing is that, you know, and you guys know, and I don't, please don't try not to give me reviews on this one. And I'm just, you can just turn it off. I don't need to hear. But I just, at the end of the day, I don't want to take anybody's guns away. But what I would want to say is that I think we can all agree, even gun lovers, that this isn't how you would want guns to be used. So we got to protect them even more, you know? Like, I enjoy having some drinks, but I know I can't drive. I know that's like a law, it's a rule, and you could harm others. And if I want to drink, I know I can't drive. And there's like kind of this trade-off. There's this thing. And I just think that we could probably do, I want to say a little, but a lot more towards that kind of stuff. And that's not about taking anybody's guns away. Like literally, like if you're willing to be safe with them, with these powerful weapons, man, that's amazing. But I feel like we got to fight to be as safe as possible. And we got to fight to really alert people to other people's mental stability and all of this stuff. It just seems so much. And we've been through such a rough couple of years. And so, I don't know. That's it. That's all I'm going to say. You guys, I know, feel it too. And I wish I had more answers, and I wish I could speak from a place of more confidence, and that I didn't have to speak in a way that I'm always scared that I'm going to get a lot of blowback on something that's just like really simple. Like I just don't want to see kids die, especially from this. And what's so cool about having that opinion is that I know we all have that same opinion. It can be that simple. There's no politics in that, right? It's just simply that. We don't want that, right? But that's it. Okay, so we're going to get to an actual show right now. And like I said, I love to apologize. It's kind of like what I'm good at. But that is what it is. You can use the timestamps if you want to skip right to the interview. But let's get right into this interview right now. And like I said, our guest today, she is awesome. She's actually with iHeartRadio and Cloud 10, the production company that I'm with. And they got me hip to her, and she was awesome. Like, one of my producers, or one of the people that, helps me over at Cloud 10 was like, you need to talk to Jamie King. And she loves Below Deck. And I was like, I will, all you have to do is say, I want to talk to you. And I'm like, let's make that happen. Like, that could be anybody. I will talk to people. I was talking to my new friend Ellen from Patreon. We did a Gallery Girls recap for the Patreon. And it was just like, oh, this is dope. This is why I do, like, I can just talk to people on a podcast and it gets me over my weird anxiety of doing it in real life. But today's guest, Jamie Wright, you are going to love her. I really do highly, highly recommend both of her podcasts. So one is called Murderish, and it is in that true crime vein that is so not, I hate to say in vogue, because she does all this research. She tells these kind of like, you know, truthful, factual stories that I think you guys will dig so much. But then her new one blew me away. I've actually subscribed to it and have been listening, and it is called Dirty Money Moves. And we talk about it throughout this entire podcast, but I think you're going to especially dig Dirty Money Moves. So I really suggest you guys check out both of these. So first podcast called Murderous, and the second one is called Dirty Money Moves. But without further ado, here is my new friend, Jamie Rice. We recorded this last week, so it's none of the bummer feelings that I might have had in this opening. She is awesome, and you're going to have a great time listening to this. So that is all for today, folks. Listen to this interview, and I will talk to you bright and early on Thursday, because we got to finish out this week strong. We got Beverly Hills coming out. We got Kardashians. I got an interview with a housewife. There are things happening, folks. But I love you all, and please just be safe. I care about everybody. Okay, bye. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to So Bad It's Good. Today we have a great guest. I love when I get guests like this where they do kind of what I do, but they do it better. I was like, okay, this is what you got to do, Ryan. Cause I was listening to her, not just one, but two podcasts. She's with iHeart and Cloud 10, like I am. So I got to meet her that way. And it's always kind of amazing to meet other people that you do. And I want to talk about that, but she has two podcasts. One is called Murderish. And, you know, obviously I think that's, you guys know what that's going to be about. But it's awesome. You need to check it out. And it's one of those things, like, I wish we'll get into this, cause I'm like, I wish I could cover like murder stories. I'm too silly. I can't, it's a really intense topic. And then the other one that I really think is going to be really up your alley is called Dirty Money Moves, Women in White Collar Crime. And it focuses on this story of Mary Carol McDonnell, who is a self-proclaimed heiress and the CEO of a TV production based company based in Los Angeles. And she kind of potentially grifted millions of dollars. And it reminds me a lot of Housewives, you guys. But not only does our guest do all of this, she's also a Bravo fan. We were just talking beforehand. She is OG, watching from the beginning. And I just can't wait to like kind of get into this. So Jamie Rice, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I love your show, Ryan. And I know before we started talking, you're like, oh, you know, you're so professional on your podcast and mine's so silly. I always, before I started podcasting, wanted to do a freaking silly podcast because I'm more like you, kind of a smart ass. I like to talk shit about this.
Yeah, she has a website. I was on her website. It says she was a class clown. And I'm like, first off, class clowns don't make websites. You can't be an organized class clown. If you're a class clown, you don't have a website. So I was excited. I was like, I got to get me one of these websites. Look at this.
Yes. So profesh.
And you guys, we're on Zoom right now, and I want to just paint the picture. In the background, she has her logo. I think it's framed Murderish. But then she has one of my favorite Jay-Z quotes, ladies is pimps too, framed behind. And that is amazing. So you haven't always been a podcaster, because that really would be, they didn't exist when I was growing up. So how did you even start this journey? Because I know you actually had a normal job. Your first podcast is Murderish, and then Dirty Money Moves is the new one. But how do you, like, I know how I stumbled into like talking about reality shows, but how do you stumble into talking about murder?
Yeah, good. So I've always been into true crime since I was a teenager. My mom and I used to watch like murder trials on court TV. I used to read books on serial killers. It's something I've always been obsessed with. And then fast forward, my husband and I live in the LA area, and I had this crazy, horrible commute to Beverly Hills every day to the bank that I worked for. I spent 18 years in commercial real estate financing. So boring, I know. but I guess it's kind of cool because that's what brought me to dirty money moves, and we'll kind of connect those dots. So I had this really shitty commute, you know, on the 405. If you're from LA, you know, and driving in Beverly Hills.
I was an actor before. I mean, I still am an actor, but like it was just those drives to commercial auditions in Santa Monica from Los Angeles or the Valley to there. You guys, you would be in like an hour and 10 minute commute to go 12 miles.
Absolutely. It's insane. So this was probably like, you know, 6-7 years ago. So I came into work one day all flustered, bitching about traffic. And my friend's like, dude, you need to listen to podcasts on your commute. And I'm like, what's a podcast? Yes. Yeah. What is a podcast? So he told me about Serial, of course. I listened to Serial, and it was a game changer. Like,
yeah,
I was
right?
Completely hooked on podcasts. It was right up my alley. So then I started binging like crazy. Then fast forward a little bit, about 5 years ago, I got chosen to be on the jury for a first degree murder trial here in LA. And it happened right here near my neighborhood where I live in Santa Clarita. And so I got chosen to be on that jury.
When you go in for that, a lot of people will be like, I don't even want to go to this jury, dude.
I tried.
I don't even want to show up. That's what I was like, were you like, I love murder, let's do this. Like, were you trying to get on this journey? Okay.
Hell no. I was super busy in my career. And, you know, it could be some stupid like traffic civil case that nobody wants to see. You know, there's no
only
guarantee.
A handful of people get an OJ Simpson trial.
Absolutely. I mean, that would have been like amazing. So I put it off. I called in and I requested an extension, but it would only last for like 30 days. And then they basically said, well, you need to call back in on the certain date, which was about 30 days later. And I did. And lo and behold, they're like, okay, report to San Fernando Superior Court on this date. And it was like in the summer of 2017-ish, I want to say. So I went in, and long story short, I ended up getting chosen for this first degree murder trial. And I ended up being the jury foreman. And
oh,
it was
my gosh.
Crazy.
You're the head of the jury.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Is it like a straw poll? How do you get to be a head of a jury in criminal cases?
You know what? I am the person who, like, I was class clown, talked too much, had my seat, you know, moved every which. Literally, one of my teachers when I was younger moved my damn seat outside of the classroom because I was such an asshole. I couldn't stop talking. talks too much. So I was not shy. And most of the people on the jury were very kind of shy, soft-spoken, not everybody. And so a few of us raised our hand and said, look, I'll do it. It's, you know, I think I can give everybody a fair shot. That's all your job is as the jury foreperson, is like not to make up everybody's minds. It's the opposite of that. It's just to give everybody a chance to speak. Hopefully nobody argues. You just kind of keep peace, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was interesting. It was a 2-week murder trial. It was a young girl, 25, married an older guy. Long story short, they had just gotten married, and he had a lot of abuse in his past. Many of his ex-girlfriends testified, and he murdered her in their apartment. And we convicted him of first degree murder. It was a really heavy thing to go through.
What's that like for him to be in the courtroom? I mean, is that still like
eerie, absolutely eerie. And he had a very unique look, and I talk about it all. So my very first episode of Murderish, if anybody's interested in that case, episode one of Murderish is called Arvizu Murder. And it covers that. It's me talking about going through that trial as a juror. So I kind of take you inside the courtroom.
What an amazing entrance point. I mean, how long was that? I mean, did you get out of there and go, I gotta do more of this. I gotta do a podcast. Like what was it, just immediate right after that jury situation that you started the podcast, or was it years later?
Pretty quickly. No, the jury experience was in the summer of 2017. I launched my podcast in November of that same year. So it was just a few months later. I had already been researching kind of like how to start a podcast. I was interested in,
oh my God, thank God. I thought you were about to say how to murder. And I was like, no,
I already know how to do that based on all the true crime. I mean, if anybody,
by the way, if I were your husband, I mean, has he ever been like, yo, this is getting too wild. Like, please.
He sleeps with one eye open. Cause he's like, not only do you know how to murder, it seems like you probably know how to get away with it.
Are you watching The Staircase yet on HBO?
No, but I definitely listen to the podcast on it, and it's just a wild, and I am so owl theory. I really do think there's something.
Oh
to
my
owl
God.
Theory.
You're one of the owl theory.
I do. No. I do.
You it's guys, crazy what she's sounds. Talking about is that there's this theory, Michael Peterson, that an owl came in with the talons scratched at. I just come the guy, but then you have to take away the Michael Peterson's history with the other mysterious death of his other wife. His like he had motive.
Oh, wait.
He was actually.
Wait, I don't think Michael, are you mixing a Peterson with a different Peterson? Are you talking about the law enforcement Peterson guy?
No, I'm talking about the guy from the guy. Staircase. Remember
I got
in the staircase,
okay.
He had the other wife that had mysteriously died like 25 years ago.
Yes.
That they covered in the documentary.
Yes, you're right. You're right. You're right. Yes.
And
yes.
Then he also had the liaisons with other men. And he was like, I'm bisexual, which there's nothing wrong with that. But the owl theory to me is like, I have now four people that I respect believing the owl theory.
I am not somebody who believes in wild conspiracy. I consider myself a very level-headed, like just look at the facts. Where do they take you? There is not sufficient evidence in my mind for that stupid flimsy.
Oh, the poker, the fire poker.
I mean, it's so deep into her skull when they shaved her head and they show the autopsy photos.
Yeah.
It's so deep. So there, I mean, yeah. So I do think there's something to the owl theory. And if the owl didn't do it, I absolutely still question whether Peterson did it. That's my big thing is if the owl didn't do it, I still don't think there's sufficient evidence to show that he did it. Now you want to talk about Scott Peterson, dude's guilty. I don't care. That's
but you
obvious.
Know what? You know what, Jamie, it's so crazy is that it's like housewives arguing about housewives.
Yes.
You know, no matter how bad you are, there's going to be a huge contingent of people saying you're great. You're innocent. Yes. Like Scott Peterson even has like a whole wide net of people that say he's innocent. This has been a threat. Like, I'm like, it's just wild. Even if you've obviously did it, there will always be people, a large amount of people that think like, oh, you obviously are not guilty.
Dude, you're so right. And like, I had somebody on my podcast recently and he literally said, you know what? I'm still undecided on OJ. I said, bro, okay, hold on.
Yes, I agree. That's the one that got me because you guys, I host a reality show, pop culture podcast, but OJ, we've talked about many times because I think that is a zenith moment in pop culture history. I mean, it's one of the first things. And I think we're, you know, seeing all the chickens come home to roost in terms of the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial right now. Like pop culture is in a weird moment where I believe it started with OJ in a lot of ways, the commercialization of these kind of trials. And I almost think it opened the floodgates to even murder podcasts, Dateline, all of these things. It's kind of, but now we're almost being more entertained by these horrific crimes in reality than we are with actual entertainment that's set to entertain us. You know what I'm saying?
It's so true. Like you and I started off our conversation before you hit record with me saying I'm an OG. I love, you know, I've watched The Housewives since the beginning, but I'm on protest right now. And,
why?
But okay. So it's not what I want to see. There are too many assholes. And that is a light term. Like Erica Jane, Jennifer Aiden, Teresa Judy J. I cannot even like Heather Dubrow is so boring to me. I don't know why everybody like held her up as this rock star that she's coming back. Fancy pants. She is so boring to me. She is such a speech test. I'm sorry. But like Erica Jane she's beyond. I don't want to see that level of drama. I think she is so selfish, probably narcissistic, gross.
Oh, probably?
Yeah, bully. Wait, like, I'm not a psychologist, so I can't diagnose. But in my mind, she's got she checks some boxes for psychopathy. That's just my
guess.
Well,
I mean, I always have that argument. Anybody that even signs up to be on a reality show to begin with has psychopathy. I mean, like, there's already something unwell, you know, because why, you know, and a lot of these ladies now, it's fascinating. And to your point is, and even to what you do, like the Dirty Money movie, because I was like, dude, you got to start doing just like Dirty Money Moves Housewives edition because
100%,
you know, I mean, the Jen Shah story, which is about to start trial. I'm like, you could take that. That's a white collar crime that is wild. Cause I know that's what Dirty Money Moves focuses on is this lady with the white collar crime, but I get there's a desensitization level with these things where we've now grown up with so many murder details from reality and all this stuff that we almost like shrug these horrific things off. We're like, you know,
totally.
I know I don't feel good about it inside, but I also realize that like what I would have been aghast at 10 years ago barely makes me flinch anymore.
Yeah. And I'm not at all trying to say that I am some moral authority and I'm on protest because it's just too dark. Listen, I watch trash TV all the time. Okay. And I have no problems with anybody watching The Housewives. I've watched it for years and years and years. I literally, you know what it was, is that when I watch somebody like Erica Jane, it bothers me to my core that I can't jump into the TV and tell her how I feel.
That's why you start a podcast. That's what I do. I do this every week. Yes. Is that I even wrote this yesterday. I said, I just finished watching Beverly Hills. I need a day to process, but I'm already angry about multiple scenes. Excited to record. Like so I get angry. Excited because I know I can yell out my thoughts and exercise the demons because I have this weird, and believe me, I make mistakes all the time and not the kind of mistakes that Erica makes, but I rail against unfairness. Like I feel like there's an unfairness in how we treat the wealthy, how money moves things to, you know, speak to your podcast. Like, you know, this is a, like money does things to people, either the quest for it or once you have it, it opens all sorts of doors and rich people live a different existence than a lot of the rest of us. And, but it also the quest for that causes so much trauma along the way, whether it be stealing, murder, all of the things that you do, I believe come for that quest, not only to be loved, but for money.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with you. And people with money, they have a different justice system than, you know, the vast majority of people who are just regular, average, everyday people with no power, no money. But yeah, just Erica Jane, like when I see the way she talks to people and she thinks she is just so badass and so this and so that. And like, I love a Sutton and I love a Garcelle and they're the only ones who are really even pushing against her, but it's such a soft push against it. I'm like, no, ladies, we need to let this bitch know she isn't that cool. She's nothing without her scandalous, fraudulent husband who's got all this money. Where did her career go? She had this amazing career in quotes, and it doesn't exist without the money that he was funneling into it. It wasn't even a profitable career.
No, it always lost money. The Erica Jane, quote unquote, character lost money year after year. The financial documents are out there. You know, that is non-debatable. I don't care who you are. But the funny thing is that you're saying like Sutton and Garcelle is that, yeah, like sometimes at those reunions, I think we all feel that out there where you're like, yo, okay, stop. You said this. Now let's put out some information. We got some tax documents right here. Let's walk through it together. There's really no pushback. So these kind of wild accusations, or Erica can be like, I was proven innocent. Everybody knows I was proven innocent. And like, so we just have to accept that because there's no pushback. There's, you know, and Sutton, you're not watching this season, but I will say, and by the way, Sutton has her own quirks and all that stuff, but Sutton is finally, you know, getting some confidence. She's finally like last night she had an interaction with Erica Jane where it was like, I'm not apologizing to you. F you. I don't like you, you know? And it was good. And I feel like that's where fan support actually comes in because we gas these people up so much that they start to kind of get confidence. And sometimes that's been really bad, but sometimes in Sutton's case, I was like, good, we need you to be confident and not get shouted down by Rinna and Erica.
Absolutely. And it's like Sutton, let's go, girl. Let's explore this. Keep going. Like
push
let's
deeper.
Go.
Like don't let people make fun of you for reading the LA Times article. Let's keep
that's
reading.
Amazing
let's keep,
that she did that.
You know, I mean, it's funny. It's like make fun of people that actually want to know facts. That's what the whole theory was last year.
Yeah.
So you are on a hiatus you said, I can't do this. Is there any shows that you, because I know you and your husband are big Below Deck fans.
We are.
Is that
my husband
the
calls
only
it
Bravo
the, no, it's not. My husband calls it the boat show. So
he's right. Like, I mean, he nailed it. It is the boat show. Yeah.
And my husband does not watch reality TV other than he does love him some Parker Schnabel of Gold Rush. That's his reality show. I don't know.
Oh,
if you know
that's
that
on
this show
Discovery,
exists.
Right? Yes.
Oh, he's obsessed with Parker Schnabel's quest to get the gold. Like, so that's his only reality, but we both love the boat show. And so every night he'd be like, hey, put on another boat show. Is there a new boat show? And we're always
does he realize now there's multiple boat shows? Like, cause Below Deck now has three or four. They have insane amount of iterations, and they just announced another one at the Bravo Upfronts on Monday.
Oh, thank God.
It's like Below Deck Adventure or something. So pretty soon there will be a Below Deck franchise for every night of the week, or that's what they're working up to. Does your husband actually even realize he's watching different shows, or he's like, oh, there's the boat. We're on the boat show. Yeah.
The answer is yes and no. Yes, he 100% knows there's different like franchises or whatever, with the Below Deck Med, Below Deck Sailing Yacht. We've watched them all. So we have binged every single episode, but he doesn't really understand like Below Deck staff. Like they don't know the Below Deck Med people. They're not on the same boat. He just knows it's a boat and a bunch of people having sex.
Hey, where's Aisha? Why isn't Aisha on the sailing yacht?
I'm like, babe, that's Med. That's the Mediterranean. They don't know each other.
I always say that it's Below Deck and Summer House are the two Bravo franchises for all you ladies. I've said this multiple times, trying to get their partner involved. Those are the two ones that are like gateway drugs to Bravo, because if you can make a man feel comfortable watching, starting with the boat, they'll kind of rapidly go, okay, I can dig this. They'll huff and puff. But then Summer House weirdly also does it too, because you got to start them with one where they're like binge drinking. Yes. If you get a Kyle on a binge drinking tear from like a couple seasons ago, they'll be like, oh, I've binge drink before. Okay. You know, and then they get involved in all the minutia of the drama, but they feel comfortable within because they're still being manly in some way.
So true. And actually, so he doesn't watch Summer House with me, but last night I did turn on the reunion part two, Summer House. Yeah. And so of course, and then he has questions. Then I have to pause it. And he's like, and I'm like rolling my eyes back so hard, but I'm like, okay, that's cool. We're together. We're, you know, bonding over the show. But he was really irritated by Kyle. Actually, he was like,
why?
I think that Kyle's demeanor and his immaturity and the way that he got, Kyle seems to always, this is something I don't like Kyle about Kyle either, is that whenever Amanda has a legitimate beef with Kyle, because he can be a real a-hole to her. Now, I'm not saying he's overall a bad person, but he's not always the best husband or partner. He makes it all about him by crumbling and crying. And that pisses me off. And then she feels bad and she's hugging him and consoling him. And he's like, I'm just trying to, you know, I got to be the best man I can be. And Steve kind of like saw through that. And he's like, bro, come on. Like, it just bothered him that Kyle was really sensitive about when Paige had some things to say about Kyle during the season. And then Kyle had rewatched the show and was like, you know, it just kind of hurts when people say those things. And it's like, but dude, you made your bed, you had that behavior. So Paige is going to feel some sort of way about the way you treat her best friend. Like, it just is what it is.
True. But I mean, and I know your husband doesn't have an opinion on this, but do you have an opinion? I hear Mean Girls get thrown around a lot in regards to the Paige, Sierra, and even Amanda, after we saw a certain scene backstage from this past week's reunion. Do you think, though, they're mean girls? How is your view of that?
No, nope.
You don't.
I don't. I think they're bratty sometimes, especially Paige. I do think she's a spoiled single child and it shows and all those things. But I wouldn't go so far as to say mean girls. My focus actually is more on Lindsay. Lindsay is the most fun to watch on TV. That is the truth.
Yes.
She makes for really good TV. I would never want to be her bestie, though. She throws up so many red flags for me. So many red flags. She is not a girl's girl. She brushes people off. She does dismiss people. She's very famous for like, not my problem. And it's like, bitch, it is your problem. You're the one who was like acting inappropriately. And she's not a girl's girl. And she reminds me of the girl who like in high school would like brag to her girlfriends, oh yeah, like I'm just one of the guys. The guys like really, I thought, you know, all my best friends are guys. Well, that's a red flag for me. If you can't get along with women for the most part, you get along better with guys. It's a little bit
but
of a
women
red
are
flag.
So tough on women. Like, I deal mainly with women through like 96% of the audience is women that I have. And like, it's all my favorite people in my life are women. But like, I notice, I mean, I hate to say this, you guys already know this, is that most women, like, I've seen women, like, you think men treat women bad? We do. But do you, I mean, like, I've seen women just go to town on other women, like, where I'm like, what? Like, I mean, even in what was I watching the other night? Oh, it was Beverly Hills last night, where the women and the men were like eating, and then the men went off to have a drink, and the men were over here talking about like in medieval times, how would you pee? And the women were like literally starting to like just get into each other, like fuck you, yeah. Sutton, no F you, Erica. And yeah. It was like this difference of like, whoa, like guys are so basic sometimes. And girls, I've seen, for all like, you know, women supporting women, I've really seen women give women a hard time, you know?
I totally agree with you, but you have to have the ability to push those women away. Like for me, like I use my two best friends as a perfect example. I mean, I don't mean to brag, but I got the two best friends in the whole wide world. They're super, like in a real way, very supportive of me. They're not jealous of me. I'm not jealous of them. We lift each other up. We truly have each other's backs, and there's no like,
wait. Do you ever go, this is what I always would like when I hear stuff. Do you ever go, hey, I just wanted to point out right now, I'm lifting you up.
Yeah.
I'm lifting you up right now. I'm going to lift want points, you. Like, I want this to be, you text, this yeah. is a lift up. Yeah.
Yeah. Excuse me. I want points for this. I am lifting you up. Yes. Yes. Friend points. I'm going to start doing that actually.
Yes, please. You just got to lift up. Yeah.
Yes. But you know, if all you're surrounding yourself with, and that's all you're able to do is surround yourself with these catty, toxic chicks, it's like, but then those aren't friends. And yes, those are the wrong women. I've had those women in my life too. And it's, you cut them out at a certain point, right? But if you continue to surround yourself with them, then that's what you're going to get. And women can be super catty, super one-upper, but you have to be able to like navigate through and find the right women to surround yourself with. And I know sometimes it can be hard. I have struggled with that too, but there are good women out there who aren't going to be an asshole to you if you buy a Porsche and they're like, oh, this bitch, you know, but they're going to actually be like super stoked for you, you know, super like, you know, but yeah, I mean, women can be super mean, but I think Lindsay, and I love watching Lindsay on TV. Like, don't get her activated. That's amazing. I love yeah. what. And
I mean, like, there are certain people that speak in reality show verbiage. You know, yeah, like that's yeah. a great line. You know,
a great line. And so she's so much fun, and she does. She puts it all out there. All of her little, you know, all the men she made. Go, girl. There's no issue with that. But like, her behavior really isn't that of a girl's girl. She has the perfect best friend in Danielle, because Danielle is a background girl. I love Danielle. She's a sweetheart. Like, she has like probably super great morals.
You're nailing it. You're nailing it. And I love, like, Danielle, I love, but she is, and but she's committed. She doesn't care that she's a background girl. She's fully okay with being in the background.
Absolutely. And these other girls are not, and which is why they bump heads with Lindsay. I would bump heads with Lindsay. I think me and Lindsay would like have a great time doing beer bongs and whatever the hell. Like, but I just think at the end of the day, I could never be super close to Lindsay, because she really, she probably like, if I was seeing, I mean, I'm married, but it's like, if I was seeing a dude, she probably would cross that line and kiss him in the background. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love how she was like, it's not my fault that like Austin picked me up and started kissing, but it is your fault that you wrapped your legs around him and leaned into the kiss, you know?
Oh, I mean, like, listen, I was saying the other day, I was just like, Lindsay is the reason, I mean, and I, Lindsay's Lindsay to me. It's like saying like, there are just certain, I unfortunately, this is a horrible comparison, but she's like, to me, she's like Kramer from Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's your wacky next door neighbor, you know, like that's Kramer. Like, I just think like, that's always been Lindsay. Mm-hmm. I don't think she's actively trying to take somebody down, even though I do think that she didn't like Sierra at all. Like, agreed. I do think that was in the works, but it was so funny. I haven't said this on the podcast yet. I had mentioned the Amanda comment backstage about like Carl. They were all like, F them. And Paige is like, F Carl. And Amanda's like, he works for us. Lindsay has tainted him. I don't know if you caught this little scene on.
Oh,
yeah. No. It was like a really, it was like, okay. It was in between commercial. Like, it was like right when they went to commercial, when they gotcha. Went backstage, but it was a really, and I had tweeted it. I talked about it on the podcast, and I shit you not, you guys, I went to my Instagram DMs and Amanda Petula DM'd me, and I was like, oh no. And those are the ones where you get the pit in the stomach and you're like, oh no. Ooh. I don't want to open this.
I
don't.
What did
I
say?
Amanda follows me. Amanda's been on the show.
Yeah.
I don't, and I've always said, I like Kyle and Amanda. I mean, they had a rough season, but I don't dislike them.
Sure.
I kind of dislike Paige sometimes, but
yeah.
So I open it and it's a long paragraph and I'm like, oh no. Ooh. And she's like, I hear you're disappointed in me. And like, she wrote this all. And it was like,
aww.
But what broke my heart was that, like, I was like, just, I'm like, I'm, imagine like she's taking the time to write a paragraph to me of all people. I'm like, like, listen, girl, this is sad that I'm even making this my life. Like, this is sad. Like, there's like levels of sadness. And I wrote back, go, yo, you know, like, I'm, you know, I don't know what to say. I don't know you. I'm going by what the show. I said that was a weird comment. I expected it from Paige. It shocked me from you. And then I'm like explaining it like I would to a friend. And I'm like, what is wrong with
what
me?
What are we doing even here? This is and not I was that like, serious.
I just felt so cringy in my own skin. And she saw it, but she did not respond to it. And she hasn't unfollowed me yet. So that's. But I was like, this is so silly. I mean,
it is.
I was just talking to my friend who's getting married in October, and there is so much to plan. You got to do the food. You got to do the food tasting. You got to book the venue, talk about the DJ. And then not to mention all of the emotion that goes into this. And then all the while you're like, ooh, what would I do if I had a wedding? I've been a part of a lot of weddings over the years, and it's an incredibly stressful process. You go from this newly engaged bliss to overwhelmed by invitation paper and flower colors in the blink of an eye. So using Zola helps with wedding planning from start to finish, and it makes every decision easier so you can stay in your bliss. With Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place. From the day you get engaged and search for the venue to the day you send out your save the dates, make your registry, and even taste that delicious cake. Zola has literally everything you need to make the whole process super easy and actually enjoyable. There's even a five-star app that helps you plan on the go or on your couch. Zola helps couples plan the wedding they really want with tons of unique features and personalized recommendations based on a couple's preferences. Every Zola wedding is as unique as the couple planning it. They've thought of everything you'll need and have built every tool to get you to I do, including customized checklists to get you moving, keep you on track, and prepare you for what's next. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
And then I felt bad the entire night that I was like, oh no, I hurt Amanda's feelings. I didn't mean to hurt. And I was like, these shows are wild because we have this really false notion in our head that these people should all be friends. And it's like, think about your own lives. If you put eight people in a room, I know I'm not friends with all of them. Like, no. I just, that's not how the world works. Like, period. It's never going to be that way.
No, you're exactly right. And speaking of Amanda, you know, she's somebody, when I first started watching Summer House, I was like, oh, I'm not going to like this girl. She was like super whiny and like, Kyle. And I thought she was going to be the biggest bitch. I was totally wrong. I think Amanda is the most level-headed probably of anybody. Carl now too, now that he's clear-headed, he's very level-headed and practical. I think that Amanda overall does want to please everybody and be nice to everybody and be friends with everybody to get along. She doesn't want to create drama. A lot of the things she says make just such good practical sense. So she's a good human being. I really like Amanda. Is she as fun to watch as Lindsay on a reality show? No, but she's still fun to watch and she's a good person.
Yeah, my the thing I love about Summer House is the same I love about Below Deck, is that I can watch minutia on both of those shows and I'm fine with it. I can watch Amanda laying in bed and I get a kick out of it. Like, I don't expect much from either of those shows. Mm-mm. So those shows in particular pay me so many dividends, because on like Housewives shows, you expect now an elaborate plot. You expect almost, and we'll to get into the shows you do, we've now come to sadly expect the Erica Jane lying, cheating, and stealing. We expect the Jen Shah. We expect, and these are now what these shows kind of are revolved around. And when they don't have them, we're almost disappointed. We're almost like, well, why isn't there a murder this season? Why isn't there? There should be. We just have to watch these ladies exist, which is how these shows started in the first place.
Yeah.
So I want to cover both of your shows, but let's start with Murder Money Moves. Dirty Money Moves.
Yep. You got it.
I was having a stroke there. this you have a connection with because of what you said was your boring job. Explain the story that you're covering, this lady, and what the crux of this is. Because right now, three episodes are out. We need you to go subscribe, hit that subscribe button, hit that five-star button. That's what we do right off the bat for anybody, any podcast that comes on this show. It's like the easiest, simplest way to say, I like what you do, and it's free for you to do it. So please go do that. But explain the story that you're covering on this season.
Yeah. So Dirty Money Moves all came about because in 2017, I was working at a bank in downtown LA, a commercial business bank. And I had a really tight-knit team. We had all essentially come to the bank together. And we would always joke like, hey, if shit hits the fan at this bank, we're all leaving together. We were a package deal when we came in, we'd be a package deal when we left. And we're all still close friends to this day. But I had a really tight-knit team. My colleague at the time got a referral from an attorney that he had worked with in the past who would give him referrals, you know, for new clients before. And this particular attorney, his name is Barry Rothman. Barry Rothman is he's an entertainment lawyer in Los Angeles. He's represented The Who, The Rolling Stones, Yolanda Hadid.
All the greats. Wow.
Yeah. Yolanda Hadid is up there with The Rolling Stones. Okay. Sorry. If you're a Housewives fan, she is. I like how your ears perked up only when I said Yolanda.
Yeah.
Hadid.
I was like, she said Rolling Stones. I'm like, yeah. Oh, Yolanda. Wow.
Oh, okay. Now I'm listening.
She used to have a clear glass refrigerator in her house.
Exactly. God, I want that fridge. But I'm too messy for that. So, he had represented all these big names. So Barry Rothman reached out to my colleague and said, hey, I've got a referral for you. It's a woman named Mary Carol McDonald. She's the CEO of Bellum Entertainment in Los Angeles. It's a TV production company who specializes in true crime TV content, which is pretty interesting, right? But he says she is also a very wealthy heiress. She is the heiress to the McDonnell Douglas fortune. McDonnell Douglas being the big airplane manufacturer who merged with Boeing back in the day. So big name. So she's about to receive like an $80 million inheritance in about a year from this family trust from being an heiress. And so, you know, my colleague took the call and he met with Mary Carol. He brought our big boss with him because she was looking to secure a $15 million loan. And so he took our big boss. They went on several meetings. And, you know, every week, as bankers do, we have these weekly pipeline meetings and we talk about what's in the pipeline. Okay, Jamie's working on this deal over here. My colleague was working on bringing Mary Carol in. So I knew all about her. We would talk about her business, talk about the progression of the $15 million loan that she was trying to secure with our bank. And then fast forward to early 2018, the loan was about to be approved. The bank had vetted it all out through credit administration. They were going to approve a $15 million loan. And it was at that time.
How long does it take for a loan like that to get approved?
Sometimes
you're dealing with that kind of money.
Yeah, sometimes it's a few months. In her case, it was about a three-month process. So I think it all started in December of 2017 and it funded in like February, no, maybe March of 2018. So so we had all heard about her. So then right before the loan was about to be approved. And by the way, Barry Rothman played a very pivotal role in getting Mary Carol the loan with us. He was sort of acting in the very beginning of the loan process. He was acting as her mouthpiece. Like he was providing all the documentation to the bank. Here's her trust documents to show that she got this money. Here's her whatever. Then my colleague during one of our pipeline meetings says, oh, by the way, Mary Carol's really appreciative of this loan that we're going to give her. So she's actually going to come in today and she wants to bring us homemade pies, which I was like, dude, can't make this shit up. And it was crazy to me at the time because, you know, in the position that we were in and the building we were in, it's not a traditional bank branch. We were on like the 20 something floor of a high rise building in downtown LA. There was no cash being exchanged, no bank tellers. So no clients ever visited us. Anytime we were working on a deal, we always went to their place of business for the meetings, even for loan doc signings, anything. Clients never came to us. So I thought it was odd. I was like, she's going to fight LA traffic and find parking and come to our 20th floor and bring us homemade pies. Okay. Sounds great. So she brings us the pies. And this is the one and only time that I ever met this heiress. She walks in, totally looks the part. I mean, she's wearing expensive clothes, expensive handbags. She's got two pies in one hand, an expensive handbag in the other. I went out, I shook her hand, introduced myself. We ate the pies. I'm not a pie person, but it was the best damn pie of my life. She made us a pecan pie and something else. So she leaves. And then shortly after she came in with the pies, the bank did in fact approve her loan and they funded it. It was a line of credit, meaning that from that point on, she could call in and request advances, right? So that's exactly what she did. right after the loan was approved and funded, she would call in to our office and somebody from operations would take the call and she'd say, "Hi, this is Mary Carol McDonald. I'd like to advance $2 million today, put it in my account." And every single one of those advances has to be approved because it's a $2 million advance. So even though her line of credit is approved and funded, each advance also has to be approved by somebody higher up in the credit department.
Does she have to give information of what she needs that $2 million for at that moment?
She didn't actually have to do that because that is all worked out in the loan. Basically, there's a loan agreement that says you can only use these funds for this purpose. And she signed loan docs saying that that was going to be the case.
Got it.
So she called in. So long story short, during about a week, maybe a week and a half time, she had drawn about $14.5 million of the $15
million. Wait, who's approving this where they let away? I mean, nobody's like, yo, she's pulling all
Great
of it out
question.
Immediately. Yeah.
Yeah. There are many. If you listen to the podcast, it's a true deep dive and you're going to get all those details and you're going to be scratching your head going, hold on, this doesn't make sense, right? That the bank would allow that to happen. So she drew down about $14.5 million. And then somebody from the bank got a little nervous because they were trying, to reach Mary Carol by phone and she wasn't returning phone calls. So, somebody in credit administration, I think the guy who actually penned her deal, who actually signed off on her $15 million loan, he calls this other bank where there was a $28 million account, supposedly in Mary Carol's name that she had offered to my bank as collateral for the $15 million loan. So basically if she stopped making payments or defaulted on the loan, we could go and grab that account and pay ourselves off and be fine. So the guy at the bank gets a little nervous because Mary Carol's not returning phone calls. He's like, let me call this other bank and just make sure we're good on our collateral source. He freaking calls and they're like, Mary Carol has no accounts here and that investment account does not exist. So that's when the bank finds out, holy shit, something's wrong. We have no collateral for this loan.
Wait,
we're fucked.
Do you answer the question why nobody called this fake bank or this bank to begin with to like before
that's,
everything gets approved?
You're asking that is still a question in my mind today. I worked there and I can tell you for a fact, these are very smart people that worked at this bank.
Like
the bank that I worked for it wasn't some rinky dink little setup. It was a multi, billion dollar asset bank that's public. You could buy stock in it. It's Bank of California. You can buy stock in this bank. So these are really smart people, but obviously somebody effed up, right? Because that should have never happened before the loan is approved and funded. They should have made damn sure that their lien on that that investment account that's being held as collateral was secure. But obviously it wasn't because it was fake. So that's a huge blunder, right? So there's all these things that happen. So that's when the bank is like, holy shit, we've been defrauded. This bank. So then they're like, and then of course the first payment comes.
Ate her pecan pie.
Ate her. Look, I'm so glad it wasn't laced with anything.
I know that's what I was like. I was like, does the pecan pie come back into play? They're obviously still
alive. Actually does come back into play, which is funny. But so the bank knew, holy shit, we've been defrauded. And of course, lo and behold, the first payment comes due on her line of credit. Mary Carol's nowhere to be found. She doesn't make the payment. She never responds to any emails or phone calls from the bank from that point on. She ghosted them. And so then after this happens, the bank's like, well, shit, we've been defrauded. It's a huge deal. So my three colleagues who had a hand in bringing her in as a client, they get put on leave while the bank is investigating this. The FBI is brought in.
Oh, man.
Everybody's interrogated. It's a big deal. So we're all sitting in a meeting one day and my three colleagues are on leave. No, they're not on leave yet. They're being interrogated. Yeah. And we all find out that Barry Rothman, this entertainment lawyer who sent her to the bank, who referred her to the bank and helped her get this deal, drops dead under bizarre circumstances. He's dead out of nowhere. And we hear that he died in the dental chair. And of course, my true crime brain is, oh, hell no. Mary Carol had him offed. Like he knew too much. He helped her with the scam. He knew too much. She had him offed. And then she fled town with this $14.5 million. Well, so that's all we knew at that point. The senior management at the bank was so afraid that maybe his death was nefarious and that Mary Carol had something to do with it. They hired security guards to guard every entry point to our office for a couple of weeks because we didn't know what was going on. We're if she did have something to do with his death, what does that put us?
Yeah.
So then my colleagues get put on leave. The bank continues to investigate. It was a really shitty time. I blew out of there like a month after Mary Carol swooped in and took that money. And I've actually never gone back to banking Mary Carol, whether she knows
did
it or
you
not,
go
changed
did you
my
leave
life.
Just because of this yes. this okay so and then you started Murderish from there,
so
right?
I already was producing Murderish when all this happened. Murderish was very new when all this happened with Mary.
But
Carole.
You were independently producing that.
But I was independently producing, yeah. Had no network representation, nothing. I was just little old podcaster me. and then I left the bank because the reason I was there, the only reason I was there was because of my team. We were all like really happy working together. We were a really kick-ass team, but now they're gone. And I saw the writing on the wall. They were put on leave. I knew they were going to be fired. And ultimately they were fired, you know, for having a hand in bringing her in as a client, which really sucked. But so I left because I was just no longer happy. If they're not going to be there.
Was there any suspicion when you left of that? They were like, yo, why are you leaving this close to?
Not on me.
Anything to do with this?
Yeah, no, not on me. But luckily, because I had nothing to do with bringing Mary Carol in. I was on
you
the
were
team
just
that
advisor,
brought her in,
yeah.
But I was just, I heard about it. So no suspicion on me, but I am positive that the FBI, when they were interrogating my colleagues who did bring her in, they wanted to know if they were in on her scam. Did Mary Carol give them a little piece of the pie, so to speak, pun intended, to pull off this scam? But that was not true. I mean, my colleagues were totally hoodwinked, you know, by this scam artist who is Mary Carol McDonald. They had nothing to, they did not know that she was this phony heiress and all these things.
These
heiresses. So basically I left the bank, but I was always obsessed with this woman and who she really was. And I always knew that I would tell her story one day. And I told myself, I'm going to do a podcast when the time is right. So fast forward 4 years later, my team and I start deep diving into Mary Carol.
And when you say your team, is your team you and your husband? Who is your team? Like,
So I have a really great researcher and writer who's worked with me on Murderish for the last 3 years, I want to say. And she's so good at research and investigation. In fact, she wants to get her PI license. I moved her over to this story. I said, hey, would you be interested in looking into this woman who I believe is a con artist? You know, I think there's a lot more there. And she's like, you know what? Let's do it. And it's been the best move ever because she has uncovered just the most granular details. I mean, so many details. And this story turned out to be so much more wild than I ever thought imaginable. But, you know, all these things that happened in Mary Carol's childhood, in her adulthood, and the extent and the complexity of her scams is just jaw-dropping. I mean, we've counted that she's been able to get her hands on about $44 million that we are able to prove.
Wow. So, I mean, I don't know if you probably watched the Tinder Swindler on mm-hmm. Netflix, mm-hmm. which, by the way, I'm sure already. Do you got the Netflix deal in place yet?
We've been approached
it down yet? Yeah,
yeah. Not. I can't say it's been nailed down, but we're definitely have a lot of interest early on. I would say after we dropped episode 2, we had quite a few people and companies and production, you know, reach out.
You're only
hey.
3 episodes released right now. It comes out every Thursday. Is that correct?
Yeah. New episodes are dropped every Thursday. We actually just dropped episode 5 today. So
okay,
we're on episode 5. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. And do we already have it finished? Do we already know the end? Is it already in the bag? How many episodes are you allowed to say?
Yeah. You know, the lady I just mentioned, her name's Gina. She's amazing. You'll hear her name at the end of every podcast. We give her credit. But Gina and I are currently planning out the narrative storytelling. So we believe that around episode 7, that will be when we will end like the narrative storytelling. But then after that, I've got a slew of recorded interviews that I've done of people who knew Mary Carol, who have really juicy insight on her. And then I'm also going to bring on some experts who are in forensic psychology to sort of break down the psychology aspect, because that's where I'm fascinated in Mary Carol, is that it's not your average everyday person who can do what she did and sleep at night. And that fascinates me.
We know where Mary Carol is today. Is there an ending to this story?
Answer that. I want to, there's an end, but no, to answer your question, this case is evolving. I want to say like every week, and there isn't an end. I'll answer. We don't know where she is.
I was like, does she come on the podcast?
I hope
you need to do a hotline and just go, yes. Anybody call in? Cause I would love to, like, this is Mary. Yeah. I got your buddy.
And I'm like, no, you don't sound like her. Can you bake pies? Can you bake a yeah. mean ass pecan pie? No, you're not yeah. her. No, but that's what's interesting is that that is, we are trying to figure out where she is. And the thing is, she's been indicted on 6 federal charges relating to the Bank of California alleged scam, you know, the $15 million that she got from them. So she's essentially on the run right now. Nobody that I have spoken with can say for a fact where she is or that they've spoken with her and they know kind of what she's up to. She's kind of on the run. She's in hiding. Because
and you said she produced true crime. Did her company ever, did she have stuff that she made?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's the crazy thing is that what's interesting about Mary Carol McDonald, first of all, she's kind of like an Anna Delvey, but on steroids, because she was actually able to pull off
work.
Many multi-million dollar scams against very intelligent people. So it's impressive. It's disgusting, but it's impressive. But, you asked a question about what was your,
I was like, where, you know, is there an end to the story? Does she come up? But then also, maybe she could produce her own.
Oh,
she
the
could
true
produce
crime.
This. Yeah. The true
yes.
crime thing.
What's fascinating about her as well is that she has legitimacy in the business, or she had. So for a very long time, Mary Carol was a well-respected TV executive. I mean, she wow. worked for Raycom Media as their VP of programming. She's won 2 Emmys for her work. Yeah. Like,
see, that's the psychology I want to know.
Yes,
of like, what? Yes. Why wasn't that enough? Like,
that's what I want to know is that she could have done it all the right way and been wealthy, well-respected, but at some point, and we kind of nailed down where, what year we think it was that things turned for her. But at some point she took a hard left into financial misconduct and just ripped off some of her closest friends, these financial institutions. She didn't pay her employees at Bellum Entertainment. They're all filing lawsuits against her. She is a horrible, horrible person, but there's some really traumatizing things that happened in her past.
Yeah.
That there's a true, there's a crime, there's a death aspect. I can't say murder, but there's a homicide.
With Waldman?
No.
Oh, wait. Oh, okay.
Got it. Yeah. In her past, like in her childhood, she has a very traumatic, her little sister died. And her little sister was her very best friend in life. She died in a very traumatic way. And we believe that that may have had something to do with Mary Carol's sort of alter ego and using this phony heiress bit, which, by the way, once we started looking into her, you know, for this podcast, that's when we were able to say, okay, she's not an heiress at all. She has no connection. And we looked into Barry Rothman's death. And so you'll hear those answers on the podcast.
There needs to be like an international heiress registry where everybody just registers and you can like a website where you can put in if somebody's an actual heiress or not, because it's getting used way too much now.
It's so overused. And it's like, so many people fell for it, including people that I know. I mean, because it's just so outrageous. You're like, but of course she's an heiress. You know, if she says she is, because she seemed legitimate. I mean, she pulled the wool over so many people's eyes, but she's a complete liar. She tells big, big, big lies. She is not at all who she said she was.
And, you know, it's I've never heard of this before your podcast. Like, so it's really interesting. You know, there's so many stories that you're like, wow, I wasn't aware of this one. And would you ever consider doing a murderous crossover about this mysterious murder in the past? Would this be, let's focus on this on an episode of Murderish and do a crossover in that sense?
Yes, I would, because I still have questions about that traumatic death of her sister, because we don't have all the answers. We know what happened, but we're trying to understand how it could have happened, because it's pretty shocking. I would totally consider that. Although I am sensitive about it's involving the traumatic death of a child, but you know, I have certainly covered those cases on Murderish, and you just have to do it with a lot of empathy and a lot of respect,
I mean, to switch over to Murderish a little bit, I wanted to ask, like, you know, do you have ground rules for yourself about this? Because when you are dealing with murder and all of these things, you can't be, you know, like, or like, I know my favorite murder and stuff like that, they can be jokey or, you know, sure. Like, but do you have rules of like, I won't cover this, I won't do this, I try to treat this, you know, obviously you have your research team and it seems like you put so much into that, even just listening with all of the facts presented and stuff. What is your modus operandi? How do you go about Murderish?
So for me, and I have no issue with somebody like a My Favorite Murder, there is a place for that. And there's obviously an audience for that.
Yeah,
and I, you know, for me, they're not a true crime show. They're a comedy show with a little true crime flair, obviously. And they're so good at what they do. So I'm not going to knock what they do. My show is completely different. My show is more just the facts, ma'am. There is no banter. I do absolutely try to show respect to the victim.
Because I noticed even on your Murderish description, we don't get your name. We don't get your, you know, I really not bank on, but I share all of me. You know, if you listen to the show, you know me, you know, my parents, you know, with you, I was like, oh, wow. Like I, you know, your name is on the, you know, Dirty Money Moves, but it was not on this. And I was like, oh, that probably is by design as well.
Yeah, it's just, it's a completely different show. And by the way, when I started Murderish, I really didn't know what format I would have. I knew it would never be like a banter type show or a comedy type show, but I always wanted to have a co-host because for me telling stories, you know, in the beginning, if you listen to the very early episodes of Murderish, to me, I sound very robotic because I didn't know how to tell a story and have inflection in my voice because I'm talking to myself. I didn't know. So now I have all these tricks where I use my hands. I stand up. I do all these weird shit.
That's amazing.
So
that it really, the evolution of a podcaster is really fascinating. If you've been doing this for a while, because you grow, like I go back and listen. I accidentally listened to like an early show. And I was like, oh my God, like, I thought this was at the time good. And I listened back and I'm like, wow, I was so tight. And I was so, okay, here we, and it, you could hear it in the voice. And I thought that's really interesting to see the evolution of trying to get yourself comfortable with your process.
Yeah. And it apps, because you don't know when you sit there, you know, when you hit record and I talk into a microphone and I'm telling this story factually and all that. And I, you know, I'm all serious and stuff. I didn't know that I didn't know how it would sound when you put the headphones on or you listen in your car. But now when I listen back, I'm like, oh my God, okay. I've been called like a Siri robot, you know? And I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of do sound like Siri. Yep. That's true. That's accurate.
Yeah.
It's right.
Totally.
But you know, now I have all the, and I'm a hand talker anyway. So I'm always like, you know, moving my hands around. So when I record, generally, I'll stand up, I'll use my hands and have that inflection of my voice so it doesn't sound so monotone. But yeah, it's totally evolved. And you know, with Dirty Money Moves, what's cool about Dirty Money Moves is, you know, I consider myself kind of more like you, like silly, you know, just very casual. I'm not this like ever been like the super serious person. I don't think anybody who knows me would really describe me that way. But Murderish is very serious because that's the only way I feel comfortable telling these stories. That's personally for me, that's the only way I can tell a murder story. Now with Dirty Money Moves, since nobody got murdered, yes, these are very serious crimes and she did ruin some people financially, which is absolutely awful, but I am able to have some more fun with it. So if you listen to the ads on Dirty Money Moves, like I'm just like, I'm having fun even with the advertisements, you know, for the sponsors on the show, because it just lets me let my hair down a little more, which is more my style. And something I didn't tell you is me and my best friend actually did start a reality TV podcast a while back. We got like 30 episodes in. It's still out there.
What's it called?
Judgy and Jury-ish. So we're the judge and jury.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's called Judgy and Jury-ish. And it was so much fun. We always say that we want to start it back up again, but we just got too busy, especially her. She's a nurse and she just,
please don't compete against me. Please don't.
Oh, honey. if we had like, you know, 50 listens, we were happy. It was like, it was just a fun project. We never went into it like, let's monetize. I don't know. We cracked ourselves up, but yeah, it was a reality TV podcast, but that's more my style.
Yeah.
If I'm really being honest, it's like, that is more my style, talking shit with my best friend or somebody like you and just having fun with something.
How do you deal with the darkness though of Murderish? Because, you know, even with reality shows, sometimes I'll be like, man, I am so tired of these people fighting with each other, but you're now dealing with murder. You're dealing with the most horrific moments of these people's lives and having to tell that to us, having to share that with an audience. Do you take that? I mean, you're probably working from home, but do you carry that? How do you not carry that around?
Sometimes I do. And it's usually a case involving a child. So I have to be in a mental space to cover a murder on a child, and I'm not always there. So I there are episodes that involve children, but for the most part, they're not, because I just, sometimes I'm like, I just can't, because I'm a mom of three kids and it just really touches me in a way that maybe other cases don't. So yeah, but the way I deal with it, honestly, is going and binging reality TV. That's my husband always laughs. He's like, why are you so into this stuff? And I'm like, part of it is because I don't have to use my brain and it's so like mindless. And I just,
another reason why you probably had to back, like you said, you had to back off because it was getting too criminally dark. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was on, I hate to use such a buzzword, but it was actually triggering for me to watch somebody like Erica Jane. I truly despise her so much that I was like, it's not healthy for me to watch her. And you know, and I have to say, I have not been a fan of hers from the beginning. I remember from
Me too. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, everybody was like,
it's all pomp and circumstance. There's nothing else there. There's nothing. It's all costumes. It's all money. It's O-M-G. Like, that's it. What that else? Like, what are you going to tell me? Cause she's like tough. Like, she's only tough because of money, you know?
Thank you. She has been such a faker from the beginning. I felt like I saw right through her. I used to get in fights with people on social media, like, no, Erica Jane's this. And they're like, oh, bitch, you're just jealous. I'm like, oh, God. So, you know, with Erica Jane, she's always come off as a phony. She never really lets you in. She's like phony cool. Like, people are like, oh, she's so cool. Look at her outfits and she's so badass. But I don't think she is. I think she's really pretending to be somebody that she truly is not. And I just always thought she was not entertaining. She has zero sense of humor. Zero. Like, I've heard her in interviews and she's just, and it's like,
all
oh
her
my God,
jokes,
I need
all her talking
humor.
Heads are written by Mikey. Like, those aren't her real, like, you know, it's really interesting. And that's why I was like, you know, watching this season, which I know you don't, it's interesting because there's this kind of thing of the emperor has no clothes, of like, she's been stripped of a majority of her wealth. And it's interesting to, you know, to watch her try to adjust around actual people that can pay bills now, you know, like, it's like,
exactly,
she's
right.
Never had to worry about that. So it's kind of interesting. They don't call it out, but I look at the minutia and kind of like the background of things, of like what could be happening. And that's something that keeps going through my mind, of like what she must, the insecurity that potentially is there now, or the extreme naivete and obliviousness and the lies we tell ourselves, you know, the lies that, you know, you said on Dirty Money, it was like, oh, she had tragedy in her past. And so we will rationalize stealing, or we will rationalize these things that are horrible. Like, well, I had to, because, and the rationalization that Erica has to tell herself every day to get up just is incredible. And to still not be truly empathetic with the victims, yes. I think it takes real balls. I'm like, that's amazing. Like,
I think it takes
truly
real
robotic
sociopathy,
you know?
To be honest with you. I mean, like, look, again, I'm not a doctor, but like, I really, truly, her lack of empathy, and also something I think I keyed in on early on, and maybe, I don't know if you agree with me, but it always bothered me that Erica Jane, she actually, Erica Girardi, whoever she is, she doesn't really have the ability to bond with women in a real way. I think she tries, and it's almost like Ted Bundy was really, he's a serial killer, but I'm trying to make a connection.
Yeah,
here.
No, you,
like,
I'm good. I'm
Ted,
good.
Ted Bundy was really good at going out and imitating what human beings who actually have empathy and charisma do, like at a party or a, you know, whatever, a dinner party. But when he went home at night, he was exhausted by it because he was faking it all night. It was just an act. You know, Erica Jane comes off that way to me, that when she's trying to bond and the women are drinking and letting their hair down, she says these little things like, yeah, bitch, like, woohoo. She's really not having fun. She's not really bonding with these women and a girl's girl. She's just on this show, and she'll do whatever it takes to fake her way to a bond with these women. And I don't think she really has the ability to bond with women. I just don't see it. I don't think she has.
I also don't think she's
close girlfriends.
She sells sex so much. And I truly think she is probably very tame and vanilla, and not somebody that portrays themselves as the animal in the bedroom. Like, I just don't, like, somebody that is like, thou doth protest too much. Somebody that's saying how much they're
so
having
true.
Like, this season, she's like, having so much sex everywhere. And I'm like, you know, the people really having a lot of sex aren't going
Don't
around
say
saying, I've had so much sex today. I made love so much.
I so agree with you. And like those couples that are always like, ah, we just had sex in the bathroom. We just had sex over here. It's like, you probably haven't had sex in a year. And the people who brag about their money, it's like, but are you really rich? Or are you just that person who has to tell everybody you're rich because you're really not?
Yeah.
She's kind of that person.
And if you have sex in the bathroom, you're legitimately not telling people because it's kind of disgusting for the other people using the bathroom and you want to keep that hidden. Right. So how do you go about on Murderish picking the... You know, obviously, unfortunately, there is a wealth of murders to choose from. How do you go about choosing the murders that speak to you? I mean, do you already have a docket for the next 10 stories that you're going to do? Like how that's the process that really fascinates me of like, do you have to have something grab you in the story that you're like, I can tell this story? Or I mean, how does it work?
It's a variety of ways. So when I first started Murderish, it was just, okay, Jamie, make a list of all the cases that have always fascinated you and that you wanted to know more about, or cases from my hometown, and go research and write about those first, just to answer the questions I've always had. So if you listen to Murderish, like the early episodes are cases, a lot of them are out of California or cases that I had like a specific interest in. But then as you get going, you realize like people are actually listening to your show, and then they start DMing me or emailing me saying, hey, I've got a case you should look into. It's really fascinating. So now, you know, it's evolved to, for the most part, I have a list of cases. I try to keep like a Google sheet of listener suggested cases. And we kind of usually go off of that case list. So most of the cases that are submitted are listener suggested cases. And then every now and then I'll have a pet case where I'm like, you know what? I really think we should cover this one because of this reason or that. Maybe it needs more attention. Maybe it's just particularly fascinating to me. Maybe I have a connection to it, even if it's just because it's a Southern California case and those fascinate me because that's where I'm from. So there, it comes in a variety of ways, but I would say mostly like listeners suggest cases now and we cover those.
How many of them are unsolved?
Oh, only a handful. I usually cover cases that are solved simply because it's easier to get information on a solved case because it's gone through trial. And that's where you get the bulk of the information to be able to tell a full bodied story. But I have covered a few unsolved cases. But there
is
are
there
podcasts.
Ever,
go
ahead. I know podcasts right now. I mean, I think I was just watching something the other night, a murder podcast, like got new evidence admitted in some kind of case. And I was just like, wow, it's wild because you guys are no joke. Like you're doing actual research. You're a researcher and like you guys are uncovering, and especially even in Dirty Money Moves, you could be part of something that helps this woman get brought to justice. Is that ever in the back of your mind? Or is that like, that's not why I'm in any of this, but is there ever of like, wow, I could actually solve a mystery here?
Yes, with Dirty Money Moves, 100%. That was one of the top motivators, is that I hate to see an injustice. I've always been like that. I always want to see justice served. And so many people are like that, not just me. But with Mary Carroll, it really pissed me off that she was able to get away with all of this, you know, and then she just leaves with these millions of dollars and goes and lives a great life. It's like, no, I don't want the story to end that way. And I have talk to people and know people personally who she did not pay at Bellum, and they're having to file lawsuits. They're probably never going to get their money. Maybe they will if they're lucky. And I want to see her brought to justice. So yeah, if we can be a part of that, I know for a fact we're the first to break, and not that this is some national, you know, news, but we're the first to break this story and get it out into the public awareness, which is really exciting. And I do hope it's, I don't want to get in the way of any kind of federal investigation, because like I said, she's had six federal charges. She's been indicted on six federal charges. So there is a federal prosecutor, an investigation team, and FBI who are, I would imagine, actively working this case, because she's not been apprehended and she's not been brought to justice. She's not gone to any court hearings related to her indictments at all. In fact, she's invoked her Fifth Amendment right through her attorney. I mean, the audacity of this woman. So I do like, if somebody in a position of power in the justice system listens to Dirty Money Moves and goes, oh shit, you know, people have a real interest in this case, we better get going on the investigation. I mean, I'm making stuff up, but if that happens, that's amazing that we would be a part of that.
I got to tell you though, I was watching, this is silly to even relate it to this, but I was watching the Kardashians new episode last night, and it was all about Kim's work in prison justice reform. And it was really interesting to see how she was able to get this guy, a stay from his execution. And I was just like, that's the thing now, is like, we attention and celebrity and interest really drive anything in this world now. I mean, it's probably always been the case, but especially because of social media and all of this stuff, it really drives everything. And it's scary as much as it's fascinating or good. To me, that's really scary too, because what if you don't have the attention in your corner? What are all the ones we're not hearing that has no attention of crime and murder and all of this stuff?
You're exactly right. And, you know, I think it's no secret that for families of a murder victim where their case has been unsolved and these families are wanting answers, it's no secret that if you're the family member that continues to call the cold case unit and say, what about my case? What about my case? What about my case? It's going to get to the top of the stack, because that's just because you're calling so much, you're bringing attention to that case. So now all of a sudden they're going to be like, God, we got to give this lady some answers. Her daughter's been murdered. Let me start working this again. That's just how it works. So if somebody like Kim Kardashian, you know, can use her platform, you know, to for good and get somebody who maybe was wrongfully convicted or, you know, shouldn't be executed, get them a stay of execution. That's amazing. But you're right.
It's the only thing I can't fault. But I can't falter. I'm like, wow, at least you're actually, this is one thing that I think you're doing amazing with your play. Like, you do not have to do this at all if you're Kim Kardashian. So I'm like, it's one of those things that almost makes you untouchable in terms of even, I was saying, like, I can't make jokes about this. I can't, like, there's nothing I can't use this at all. The only thing you can find funny is that you go from a story like that to Courtney and Travis like humping each other in a room, you know, you're like, so those things are funny and just like the, what's coming up? Oh, and also, by the way, Murderish, I noticed on the beginning of you have Mr. Dateline doing.
Josh
Mankiewicz. Yes. Josh Mankiewicz. He does the, like, you know, the opinions on this program are not shared by Cloud 10. And, how did you get Josh Mankiewicz to do that?
It's the funniest thing. He and I have become really close friends through true crime. So we met at the very first crime con that I attended in Nashville, I want to say, a few years ago. Yeah. There's this thing called Crime Con.
Maybe you've heard of it. Before COVID.
Right. So I always go and I'm on podcast row with my podcast. But anyway, Josh and I met there, and he actually invited me and my friend to go with him and Keith Morrison and Josh's brother, Ben, to go see Heather McDonald's stand-up. Comedy while we were in Nashville. So we went with him there, and we've just become really good friends. I have a really good story if you have like two minutes for Josh.
Please.
Okay. So then he agreed to do the opening disclaimer on Murderish. He's amazing. He did it for Judgy and Juryish too. He's so cool. But okay. So Josh and I, and another friend of mine, we go to these brunches like two, three times a year. We'll text each other and say, hey, let's go to brunch. And we go to all these random places in LA. Well, we were on a group text. This is quite a few months ago. And my friend or Josh, somebody suggested, oh, for our next brunch, let's go to Hamburger Mary's. And I'm just,
I live really close to Hamburger Mary's.
Okay, and
it's like a really fun drag bar that,
So it went right over my head. And I think I was just busy that day. And I just, sounds good. Cool. Give me the date and I'll be there. Well, a few times I bring my daughter. I have an 8-year-old daughter. So this is great. So it blew over so I've brought her to lunch with Josh and our friend before. So this was no different. My husband was working. So I didn't have a babysitter. So I'm like, Stevie, you want to go to brunch? Yeah, sure. So we pull into this parking structure, and then I get a text from Josh, and he's like, oh, hey, I'm here at Hamburger Mary's. I'm in line. And I'm like, okay, cool. Me and Stevie are just getting some parking. He writes back, Stevie. And he's all, Stevie? And I'm like, yeah, what? And he's like, you know, this is a drag bar. And I'm like, fuck.
He's like, I'm in full drag right now.
Yeah. So I don't know how it escaped me that Hamburger Mary's is a drag bar, which, by the way, it's amazing. I love
it. It really is.
So much fun. So I didn't know. So he's like, of course I'm on the web. I'm like, where are they going to let me in? I've got my 8-year-old with me. Like, is this appropriate? Like, what's going on? So I go on their website and it says it's kid friendly for the brunch. Right. So I'm like, okay, Stevie can go. And like, we're very progressive. Like, we're all good. Like, I could give two shits that she's watching. I think it's amazing. Right. It's a form of art. I would love for her to see it, but I just don't know how raunchy they're going to get. Right. So I bring her in. Oh my God. It was so raunchy. And there,
By the best day of Stevie's life, by the way, probably.
I gave her a $20 bill and she threw it in one of the drag queens, like little fishing net that they walk around with. And Stevie's like, she's like dancing and stuff. So anyway, so Josh jokes to this day, he's like, dude, you are definitely topping. Like he goes, Octomom and Tan Mom have nothing on you. Like you are mom of the year, like in a sarcastic way. So he always drags me for doing that. He's like, oh yeah, I remember that day when you were like mom of the year. You brought your daughter to the drag show. So yeah.
I invite me to brunch with Josh Mankiewicz. Come on.
I will. And actually me and my girlfriends are talking about doing, you know, Tara Newell from Dirty John.
Yes, of course. I know Tara. Yes.
So
yeah.
She's super sweetheart. So me and her and a couple other girls who are in podcasting, we're talking about doing a drag brunch in June. So maybe we
please,
can all,
that
would be so
I,
much fun.
On.
I would love I can, for you to go.
I know I'm a reality, but I know murder stuff. I can play along with murder
Dude,
podcasts.
You just have to be a fun person. You don't need to know murder stuff.
I'll
and
get
I think
there.
You are.
I'll become fun in the next month. So as we start winding down here, because this has really been amazing and it was really, you know, you can tell you're a professional because this has been just so easy and fun. Where are you going with Murderish? Will there be a second season of a different story on Dirty Money Moves? I mean, these things, are they going to keep going? I mean, it is Dirty Money Moves. I was thinking, I was like, oh, you could go anywhere with this. You could, I mean, do you already have stories in mind? And then Murderish is this, I mean, it's just obviously you're already on a cycle of continuing with the stories, but do you have plans for both? And are you going to do any live touring for Murderish?
Okay, great questions. Murderish is going to keep going. I'm about to release episode 110. So Murderish is probably always going to be there. I release brand new episodes every other Monday. So yeah, check out Murderish. There's a ton to binge on there, including the case we talked about where I was a juror. And there's another one where I have a personal story where a guy followed me home. And when I came home, he was in my bedroom. And that episode is called A Stranger in My Bedroom. So that's kind of a cool story too.
Yeah.
Crazy, crazy. But anyway, yeah, Murderish is going to keep going. And yes, so I've been talking to our network about doing some live shows for Murderish and Dirty Money Moves, and maybe both at the same time. We'll see. So yeah, definitely more to come on that. I would love to do some live touring and maybe collab with other podcasters. I'm down to do it all.
If you need a warm up guy, I can do like So Bad It's Good murder moments.
That would
just
be
to warm you up.
Amazing.
Did you hear the studio is almost done for Cloud 10?
Yes. And I'm so excited. Maybe we can go there and do a collab.
Yeah,
together.
That would be awesome. Yeah. So you're going to keep doing that. And then
doing that.
As well as second season for Dirty
yes.
Money. Is
that
so
Dirty Money
on
Moves?
Agenda?
Absolutely on the agenda for Dirty Money Moves. We are talking about cases right now, but what I want to say, and I'm so glad that you just brought this up. I want to ask your listeners, like we're looking for a new case for season two of Dirty Money
Moves.
Great,
yeah.
And what we're looking for, what I really want is a lesser known case where like you think it hasn't gotten enough attention, or maybe the perpetrator hasn't been brought to justice, or just some injustice that you want us to investigate. Not a con woman. It has to be female con artist or female white collar crime perpetrator. Not one that's gotten all this coverage and that you've seen on TV. We want to actually investigate it. We want to dive into this person's past and be able to answer questions that have been left unanswered previously. So if any of your listeners know of a potential scam artist, a female, you know, that they have come across in their life or that they know of, or that they'd like to know more about, or help us, you know, help them bring it to justice. Let me know, go to murderish.com, hit the contact button, send me an email, or just DM me. I'm at Dirty Money Moves or at Murderish Podcast on Instagram.
And you guys, I'll put all this information in the show notes. And when I put it up on Instagram, I'll do links on there as well, you guys.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we're going. We want to keep Dirty Money Moves going. And we're looking for those lesser known cases that we can actually help you investigate and answer questions that you've had about this perpetrator. And, you know, maybe they haven't.
So unfortunately, no Erica Jane or Jen Shaw or any, you're not going to be covering any housewives dirty.
Well, you know what? I might cover Erica Jane on Murderish because, you know, I don't know. We might just cover her. To be honest with you, I actually have a script that I started writing about Erica Jane that I was going to either do like on Patreon or maybe the main Murderish feed, but I'm kind of waiting for more
You mean a script of like telling her story? I thought you meant like a Lifetime movie script. I'm like, oh my God, you wrote the Erica Jane story?
Oh yeah, that would be amazing. Yes. Yeah. Now that you've said that, now I'm going to go do that. But no, it was just to put the whole Tom Girardi, you know, stuff and her potential involvement, which we don't know if she had involvement, that's up for debate, but I'm waiting for the case to kind of progress more. And you might hear an Erica Jane story on Murderish. I've got like half of a script written for her.
That would be super duper awesome. But also, I don't know if she deserves the attention. Also, did you listen to that Queen of the Con, that podcast?
Yes, he and I have been talking. And I found his podcast after I put out Dirty Money Moves. I'm like, okay, let me listen to other podcasts on con artists. And so I found his, and he and I have been DMing, and he and I we're talking about doing a collaboration on the Dirty Money Moves podcast feed where we can talk about the similarities between our con artists, because
my friend's one of the producers on that. And it's really interesting. I really think that was a well-told story as well. So that's really cool that you guys, I love collaborations between podcasters and all that stuff. I think it's really exciting. So guys, we're asking you to subscribe to 2 podcasts today, leave good reviews. I'm Dirty Money Moves. I'm in, like, but I'm like, I'm going to finish this. Like, I will actually, cause I need to know the rest of the story. So I hope you guys are going to join along with me, and all of that stuff. But thank you so much, Jamie. This has just truly been amazing.
I've had so much fun with you. If I could do this every day, like, this is not work at all. This
I'll
just
see
like
you
so much
tomorrow
fun.
At like for drinks. At 11.
Hamburger Mary's. Yeah, Hamburger Mary's.
We'll record it. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much, Ryan. I appreciate you.
Betches.